Are you a business owner looking for real advice and input? You're in the right place. From concept to launch to growth, funding, and beyond. Welcome to Startup Hustle with your hosts. One once sold a business for $150 million. The other, the author of Million Dollar Bedroom. Here are your hosts of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson.
And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with John Thompson, who will be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I know that you are as well, and we'll talk about some of that soon. For those of you that aren't familiar with the name John Thompson, that's a common one, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, so we'll have to give some definition. John, you are the founder and CEO of Payit. Correct?
Correct.
You're willing to admit it too. I love it. I love it. Nothing but the truth here on Startup Hustle. So for those of you that are out there listening, you know I like to keep it interactive. So you can go to payit.gov, like payitgov.com if you want to check out what they're doing while you listen to the episode. But John, congratulations on all of the great stuff you guys have been doing lately.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
What a hard work.
I know it's, and you know, it's, I, and it, and I'm sure it all happened overnight, right?
Right. Just a breeze.
A handful of luck and a night's rest, right?
Right.
So
lots of sleep.
For those of you listening here in Kansas City or outside, I'm not sure what the statistics are, but you guys might be Missouri's most funded.
I believe startup. We are. I believe that's right.
Yeah, and we'll build some suspense about that later.
Right.
But let's get started by talking about Payit and what you guys like. Why'd you start this, John? And what do you guys do? Like, where was the problem you originally wanted to solve?
Yeah, so I'm a Kansas City guy, born and raised in this area.
Same here.
Worked in big tech companies, so I started at Cerner.
Okay.
Went to work at EMC, so been around a little bit and. Had been recruited to run a company, so I did a turnaround of a tech company in the marketing technology space. Learned a lot about leadership and business building and value creation. And then I'm a Missouri resident, live in Parkville. I married a Northland girl, so she took me up there. It's kind of how you end up where you end up.
Sure.
And one day I was running that other business, and I got the postcard in the mail from the state of Missouri that it was time to renew the registration on one of my vehicles. And I hit mo.gov/awful90s web experience, plugged in the PIN they sent me and the plate number, and it was invalid.
And that's a live URL, by the way.
Yeah. It might not be literal.
It's funny, when I ask about how this started, I almost said I have a feeling it started with something involving the DMV.
Yeah. You know, it's just like everybody else. And I just sort of marveled at that. I was like, man, how on brand? Like, I tried to look myself up and it couldn't find me. And all I wanted to do is give them money and get a sticker and get back to my life.
Right.
And instead, I found myself at the DMV that afternoon. And while I was there, I was just sort of working on my phone like anybody else would. And just thought, man, this should be different. Of course it should. It should be more modern, more convenient, more connected, more proactive. There should just be less friction in doing business with government. And it wasn't just the DMV, although it's sort of the poster child for kind of what's broken about doing business with government. But it was, as you kind of step back, it was really any and every interaction with city, county, and state government was just disconnected, fragmented. And, you know, frankly, by the nature of the way government's organized, they really do a great job of shifting the entire burden of being a consumer to us. And so, meaning you just have to go figure it out. I get something in the mail, piece of paper in the mail, which we think is broken. So the triggers are all wrong, right? And then it's sort of up to me to figure out, well, where do I go and what do I need and do I have all the right stuff? And then frankly, the vast majority of these transactions between citizen and their government at that level are walk-in, call-in, or mail-in, which is the worst way to serve a customer and the most expensive, the slowest, et cetera. And so we said, hey, I'm biased towards platforms that are data-driven and smart, and let's go reimagine the way these services get delivered to constituents and then consumed, and all with the notion of let's take as much friction out as possible and just make it easier to do business with government.
So to establish a timeline in the story, like what year was this?
So this was
roughly.
Yeah, roughly, you know, early 2013.
Okay. That's not that far. That's not that long ago.
Yeah. So I was still running that other company and just kind of started thinking, man, of course this should be different, and man, huge TAM, right? So important in the startup hustle, you want to be solving big, meaningful problems.
Yeah.
And just started looking and thinking, oh, surely people are thinking about this differently. And, you know, I was looking for sort of a reason not to go do this, which sounds a little weird. And
it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're, well, I don't know. I mean, I try to, I stop myself from doing things every day.
Right. Yeah, right.
If I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that, I mean, so many people have that entrepreneur mindset, yes, where you just see problems, you want to solve it. You're like, wow, if I could build this, do that, solve this, fix it.
Yeah.
And you can't do it all though.
No, that's right. Right. That's right. And for me, you know, I had done a turnaround and learned a ton. I mean, it was an awesome experience.
Like, what are a couple of things that well, really like stand out out of that?
Because
I have a feeling a few of our listeners have things that probably are warranting a turnaround.
Oh man. Well, as soon as you start, right, you need to fix. that's the kind of the sign of progress. If I always tell people in the office, look, if you're not a little embarrassed by what we were doing 6 months ago, yep, you're not making progress.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same with launching.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, go get started.
Right.
Right. And then keep going.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, but to answer your question, you know, we did it sort of the old fashioned way. We didn't have any outside capital, no reinvestment. We just went and listened to our clients and, tried to solve bigger problems for them. And then, you know, get paid when we created that value. Right?
Right.
So you learn really quickly. You can kind of, you know, it's interesting. One of the bits of advice I always share with anybody who's starting or running something, but especially startup, is, you know, how do you know? Because people get so focused on funding, mm-hmm, and it's like part of it, but you need to figure out, like, quickly, do you have a business, right?
Yeah.
That's scalable and sustainable, meaning, will somebody pay you or write you a check or get into contract with you? Are you going to solve some problem or scratch some itch that they value enough to pay you?
Right. Right? Yeah. I you know, so many people are so obsessed with the process of funding and,
yeah,
and venture capital and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I say to people all the time, I'm like, you know, you could also stop and sell something.
Right. Exactly. And,
I mean, there's nothing that I mean, obviously venture capital and outside money coming in. I mean, there's, and you know that what a hot topic that is.
Sure.
I mean, everyone's so obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And the problem is, you know, that's a full-time job.
Yeah,
and it can take up, I mean,
right,
it's consuming. It will,
right,
put you through like, it's kind of like going through a meat grinder.
Yeah.
And no matter how perfect you think your business is or you are as a founder or whatever,
yeah,
you're about to be humbled.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean,
yeah,
like so many different ways.
Like, you have to like that. Like, you have to feel and not take it personally, right?
Do you have to like it? Because, I mean, I don't want to like it.
You have to embrace it.
Okay.
Because, like, you have to recognize it as truth and it's what's going to make you better.
I can embrace it without liking it, but yeah, I don't know if I want to like it. So, you know, but.
All right. So that probably helps you avoid mistakes.
So, right? So outside, yeah, money coming in will definitely, yeah, it can help validate your concept, but nothing, yeah, validates it more than actually selling stuff.
Yeah. And don't get it confused, right? One,
yeah,
with the other.
Well, they can come in different orders,
right,
and oftentimes do, but,
yeah,
without the sales component in the end, yeah, it's done.
Yeah. You know, it's, yeah, funny when we were raising, seed round, and I'm happy to kind of tell the story of how we progressed,
yeah,
through all that. But I remember
and by the way, if you're listening, you want to stick around because the amounts that some of this get up to are astronomical. And like, we've had, you know, obviously Matt Watson had success and recently, Neil Sharma from DEG, they just saw a big exit, but the amount that you guys raised still trumps all that. So it's worth hanging out.
Yeah.
We'll,
yeah,
see how much suspense we can build here.
Like,
okay. So,
well,
back,
done.
So,
yeah,
now we're with Payit now. Okay. So at some point you realized, you made,
yeah,
the jump, you jump
and,
yeah,
did, right,
you jump and then build wings or did you like come into it pretty well planned?
Yeah, you know, I kind of had it in my mind, I can see it, but I just jump, right? So
yeah,
the best
way
to do something is just to go do it.
Yeah.
So I had to first kind of leave that other business and make sure it was left in a good place,
right,
which we did and took some time. And then I'm an all-in guy, right? So I just go. And ironically, I'm sure a lot of the listeners can relate to. We had a newborn at home.
I can,
and,
yeah.
You know, my wife stays at home. She gave up a nice career to help to raise our daughter full time,
And it's a harder job.
It's, oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
It's way harder than what I do every day.
100%. 100%. And I said, hey, I think I'm going to quit this job and go start writing a bunch of checks while not making any money. And she kind of just was like, yeah, I get it. And I think it's just, she's smarter than me. So she knew, like, she knew it was going to happen either way. And she's just amazingly supportive.
I think my wife might be the same way in some regards. She looks back and she's like, you know, I knew you're going to do it anyway. Yeah. So I might as well get behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
God bless them.
Yeah, totally. Well, you couldn't do it without them, right?
I always say that, you know, people sometimes seek relationship advice. And I'm like, the only thing that matters is finding someone that'll put up with your shit.
Yeah, totally.
And for me as an entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur. Cause like you said, going full speed ahead, jumping and then building wings is a very good analogy. There's nothing that will make you build those wings faster than the impending impact with the canyon floor.
Oh yeah. Totally,
you know, it's right. And I went through this at the end of 2016, like, hey honey, so I want to do something different. I think I can do something huge. I'm going to write a whole bunch of checks and I'm not going to make any money along the way. Sounds good, right?
Right.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you go.
Yeah, that's right.
And one of the things that we always want to talk about here is like, give you a realistic view of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. Because the thing is if you don't go in all, I'm an all in kind of guy.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're not going to get what you want out of your own business. If you're not all in on it, if you're not passionate about it, if you don't believe in your own vision, if you're like, hey, maybe we'll try this and see if it works, don't.
Yeah, that's right.
Just don't. Like, put your money back in your pocket. Go back to doing whatever you're doing. Because, I mean, do you agree?
100%. I'd also say, like, money can't be the motivator either.
No.
And frankly, just as a practical matter.
It's a scoreboard.
There are easier ways to make money
than
to go start a business. Yeah. Right? So if that's all you care about.
There's honestly a lot less stressful ways, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you have to just be... I think I'm wired in such a way that like probably other entrepreneurs and yourself, obviously, is like, I won't fail.
No.
Like, that's the thing, you know, like I know I'll figure it out.
Do you fear the failure though? I don't either. I mean, there's some days there's like a practical reality behind it when you're like, oh man, like this is getting real.
Oh, which doesn't mean you don't see it. You don't know, you don't recognize.
You can see it, feel it, smell it, like watch it. But the thing is like, I think for me, and the reason, because I've had this discussion actually with my wife, is I, even though I consider myself to be unemployable, like I you know, like I'm
a lot of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't find myself to be that employable because I'll have to figure out something else different. But I feel like I am good at making money. So I can't really fear like running out of it.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes that happens
as
an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay. So we're going here. Now we're all in and we're going. So at this point, are we still in 2013? Are we in 2014 yet?
Yeah, no, I made the jump full time in September of 13.
Okay.
You know, and just said, I'm going to go figure this out.
Isn't it amazing how we remember these dates as if there was like the birth of a child?
Yeah. Well,
because it is kind of like a child.
Doubt, no doubt about it. Yeah.
And my businesses require way more maintenance on most days. So,
True enough.
So now, were you doing this alone or had you attracted a founding team?
Not yet. So it was just me and I just started, I was kind of at it. I had a little prototype and, I got on airplanes and started going and pitching clients.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went clients first and then seed round after?
I want to go build the market. I want to go see, take my own advice, right? That's why I know it's the right thing is I'm not a believer in, what I know how to do. I should say I appreciate there are a lot of ways to do anything. You know, I want to go see if somebody will become a client.
Sure.
Right. A customer.
Yeah.
And then deliver vision against that need set, right?
So are you, even though you had a background working in and around tech, are you a non-technical founder?
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
I tell people I write checks, not code.
Yeah, I can't write any code, but I understand architecture and you know, what drives enterprise value.
Yeah,
and those
absolutely.
Things, kind of what matters, but
I can have the most meaningful discussion with you about tech, but I can't actually, and that's a challenge. I mean, on some levels, people ask me a lot, they say, oh, do you want to learn how to be a programmer? No,
Yeah.
No, I employ 180 of them. I mean, and they're all going to always be better than me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, I'm a sales guy.
Same here. Yeah.
And proud of it.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. It's weird because on some days it's like, you know, we talked about sales being that validator, but I mean, there's really like, if you can find a co-founder and you're a tech person, find someone that can sell. Not just another tech person. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because selling's hard.
Yeah.
Hard and it's not.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. But when you figure out like what your benefits are.
Sure.
Yeah. And how that provides value. You mentioned the phrase, you understand enterprise value. Uh-huh. So in order to do that with a software product, you have to either help people sell more, spend less, and preferably do both.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you wanted to do for the government.
Sure.
Which, right. By the way, is like either the easiest or the hardest entity to sell stuff to.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's the hardest. Yeah. Having sold a lot of Fortune 500s previously and now into government. You know,
the government makes Fortune 500 look like a breeze.
Yeah.
In some levels, because they're just not, and we'll get into that. But of obviously, course. You're trying to solve the government's own inefficiency, and then you have to climb back through it to get them to buy it.
We're trying to be a good partner to them, which they haven't always had access to good partners.
Right.
And it's a laggard market and all that, but that's changing. And
not always filled with people that care about solving the problem.
Well, I think they just, in fairness, some of that's true, right? But in fairness, there are some really smart people that really want to do better.
Yeah.
And they just haven't had, if you think about their vendor community to choose from, it's Dunder Mifflin.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, so it's like people convincing them that they're so different that they ought to write $50 million checks and go build custom software. Well, that's lunacy, right?
Yeah.
And yet it's pervasive and has been. And so we're helping to change all that and kind of get into it later, I'm sure. But it's sort of the art of the possible is different.
So now you're on the jet plane and you're trying to sell stuff to people. Now you're doing this. What did you have an MVP at this point? Did you have anything?
I had a prototype enough to kind of show a little bit. And so I literally got on a plane and I went and met. I got into a meeting and I met with 8 governors in 24 hours. And I just said,
8 governors in 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm a sales guy. I know how to.
Okay, but let's talk about that because this is a governor. Like, that's not the easiest person to get front of. So, without too many details, how'd you pull that off? Because that's a roadshow of all roadshows right there.
Yeah. So, you problem solve, right? I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. So, I'm an old Missouri Boys State alum, as is my business partner and the guy I tricked into becoming co-founder, Mike Plunkett, a brilliant guy. And that's how we know each other from Missouri Boys State and that leadership group, volunteer leadership group. So, and I just started networking, how do I want to go talk to these people and kind of tell them, hey, your customers move, they're digital. And the way you serve them, like all of your resources are misaligned into offices or mail centers or call centers. And that's not how the world works anymore. And I could help you take a lot of friction out by having better digital services, which are more in line with what we all want anyway, right? So think Venmo for government, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that will also pay benefits to you around speed to revenue collection, better compliance, big cost savings. Oh, and by the way, these people all vote, right? So don't you want to be the one to say, look, what I did to make government smarter, more modern, more convenient, more transparent?
It's amazing. I bet by even doing something like making your constituency's voter or like your constituency's DMV experience better.
Oh my gosh.
They'd almost care more about that than like issues that quite honestly, like in real, have real world implications that are probably a little more serious.
But absolutely. So you need a like first hook, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I connected to someone who brought me and walked me around and introduced me to 8 governors and it was amazing. Right. So how do you know that you're onto something? This was one of those aha moments for me in 24 hours, 5 minutes, cause you don't get an hour, right? You get 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so in 5 minutes, roughly with 8 different governors, all 8 said, come see me.
Right.
And pulled. And all I wanted was a meeting. Right. So all 8 of those governors grabbed whoever was staffing them at that event and said, hey, get John out and have him introduce him to Secretary so-and-so, right? That's all I wanted. And then I could go tell a bigger story. And so we got on airplanes and we just went and we started telling these stories. And it's still from that point though, it was enough to know we had something.
Sure.
And then,
and by the way, I want to key this. So like yeah. 5 minutes, you get 5 minutes. Yeah. And like, honestly, that's kind of a long time. Like, I mean, that's almost more than you'd expect. So I talk to a lot of people when they're trying to pitch their idea yeah. or do anything and they've uh-huh. got, you know, they're just overly verbose. And I, yeah. you know, I naturally yeah, can yeah. be one of those people. I'm a talker, but I'll tell you what, I can crunch myself in this little tiny package, yeah. like, and be able to like, what are your benefits? Like hit the yeah. benefits right away. As yeah. a sales guy, you got to love that. I mean, that's yeah, the key.
Of course, right. And I'm also a big believer in kind of that. I practice.
Yeah.
Right. So oh, yeah. I've been so doing this a long time and have been pretty good at it.
Do you do it? Are you like, when you're driving to work and stuff, find yourself like actually like talking to yourself?
I'll record myself in front of a mirror.
Okay.
Like, I'm not like, that's real.
Sure.
Like, you know, I don't talk about that, but I'm a big believer in preparation.
Yeah. So am I.
And, like it's one of the differentiators, like
right.
preparation in general.
Yeah. Right. So I have this term that I use. I call it fact shaping. Uh-huh. And it's like there's an infinite number of ways to deliver the facts about what you're presenting. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can shape those facts into the most reasonable, efficient, descriptive,
yeah.
like whatever it is. And it can be different because, like, all right, so you get 5 minutes with a governor. This is probably a type A person. You got to get right to the point, man.
Yeah.
Nail it. Like, yeah. if you're still talking about what you do 4 minutes, like, I would want to be through that whole thing in 2 minutes so I could give him a minute and
That's
then
right.
maybe answer the questions
right.
and then you're done.
Yeah. I mean, it's no doubt. So you need to be crisp,
yep.
articulate. Straight to the point
and prepared, like you
yeah,
said,
because exactly.
the thing is you're wasting that other person's time if you're not.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I always think too, you always like there's a skill to putting yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Oh yeah.
Like what's going to resonate with them.
Yeah.
Right. And it's also about empathy.
What are some things that you look at? Cause one of the things that's big for me when I'm delivering this message is understanding the recipient. And that, and a personality style has something to do with that. Like really driven type A people, I get right to the point.
Yeah.
Introverted type B type people, they want more details.
So a couple of things. I'm a big believer in a connection. So like a personal connection. So
right.
for us, even though our story was beyond the DMV, that DMV hook in a specific example is everybody can relate to it. So you need something like a quick hitter
yep.
that's relatable. You know, and
I mean, is this like, hey, do you remember when you went to the DMV and the experience was terrible?
Oh, I just would tell my story like, hey, I was sitting there just like I did earlier. And I was like, of course, this should be different. And here's why I think we can solve it. You know, bring this Fortune 5 experience into government. And then here's a different model. And do you want to learn more about it? Right. And so we have, you know, platforms instead of custom software. They've all been through that. Right. So for us, it was like, hey, this can be different and we do it at no cost and in 90 days. So there's some real quick value hitters where they go, oh yeah, I want to learn more. Hey, set up a meeting for John with Secretary so-and-so. Awesome. That's all I want. So I don't need a decision. I wasn't asking
yep.
for too much. It was,
well, you can't get one there.
No, of course
yeah.
not. But you have to be real, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, what are you trying to get out of that interaction? And you can only get one thing. You know, like I always tell people too, hey, everything isn't a next step. Like you need to figure out, like these things need to be purposeful. It's why you have to practice and prepare. So like, what are the three things, you know, like pick your things, connect, because it's all about trust, right? So how do I establish some, like there's a need, you can trust me to help think about it. And then can we talk more about it or whatever
right.
your ask
right.
is, right? Like in every interaction, I always prepare and think through, okay, what do I want to walk away from? Like, what's good look like? What's a successful interaction, whether it's 30 seconds or an hour or 5 minutes? You know, like those are habits that are really important.
Sure.
And I bet if you were to ask everybody you've ever had on this podcast, 90% of them do that. Whether they do it intentionally or not, like they know that's what they're trying to get out of something. It's
right.
purposeful, right?
Sure. Okay, so we got 8 governors, and they're giving you some serious indications that you're onto something here.
Yeah.
And now here you come back, and you're like, okay, so you're
yeah.
feeling pretty good.
Well, I'm hopeful, but I'm always I'm an optimist, right?
Sure,
so
right.
I mean, all of us are.
Yeah.
You're not an entrepreneur if you're not. And so, okay.
But I mean, let's be real. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if 8, you know, these, you got in front of decision makers, not just someone in an office or somewhere that was like, yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Like, I mean, so you get an indication that you might be onto something here at this point. I mean, did that really start to like, I mean, for me, that I would have come back and I probably wouldn't have shut up about it for like a while, because I would have been so excited. Because obviously, like, once you gauge that, the interest to do business and to have it like be widespread with whatever you're doing has got to exist to do something big.
Yeah, you know what? So your listeners know TAM, total addressable market, right? And big TAM. Yeah. So I wanted to go see if I could build something of consequence. I've talked about this a lot. I want to build the next great Kansas City business, a $1 billion company. You know, truly, you know, for a bunch of reasons. And so you need a big TAM to go do that. And so for us, there's just under $2 trillion that flows between citizens and their state and local governments every year.
Wow.
And so if we could just introduce profiles and wallets to reimagine that, you know, and really bend the economics down too, right? The cost down to do that. Like, we can build a big business here. Okay, so check. And then I went and figured out, hey, there's people who see it kind of the same way. So that's compelling, but that's still not a business yet. That's just like, there's validation of an idea, and the idea is the easy part, right?
Right,
so
sure.
Then it was like, okay, let's get to work. I need a team. So I went and got Mike Plunkett, who I've known forever, never worked together, but always wanted to. The guy's just brilliant. Don't let him know I said that. So
Mike, if you're listening, you didn't hear that.
Yeah, it violates a policy to compliment him publicly.
Yeah, I understand. We actually prefer the backhanded compliment. It would be like, you know what? Your first startup was great.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So off we went, and we started, you know, finding people who wanted to come build with us, right? And so Mike and I funded the business, just to weave in a little of the story. We wrote all the checks the first year ourselves. And you know, there's a lot of value in doing that too, because you get when you're spending your own money, you're really careful and smart. Not careful is the wrong word, because you're throwing
well,
money
it's real,
away, right? But it's real. And so you don't you know, like, we worked out of coffee shops until we had at least 7, 8, 12 people, something like that. We would just call it squawfacing. So we would just say, hey, when we're not on the road, we're going to meet at this coffee shop, and we would just sit there and buy coffee all day.
Squawfacing?
Yeah. So where we would squat and turn into an office. So we'd squawfice. And there were a bunch of coffee shops around town that we would use. And as long as we had a bar or a tab open, they didn't care.
Right. Right.
So instead of going to WeWork and spending a bunch of money, we sat there and bought coffees. Right. And so
you're pretty geeked up on coffee by the end of the day, but at the same time, you alleviate the rent cost.
Yeah. Lean, right? Like, don't spend money you don't need to spend. Right. It's a great, anywho. So we did that, created some milestones. Let me just say this too. This is a hard market to break into. So even though I had all this interest, which is very different than having a contract, you hope it's a leading indicator, but, not always. And it took almost 2 years to get a first contract.
Because, so now we're into 2015.
Yeah, because, you know, government says, slow. Great idea.
Slow.
Where have you done it?
Yeah.
You say, well, we've done it.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. So you have eight states that might be into it, and all of them are probably saying, well, who's doing this?
Well, it's a laggard market, right? Yeah. So they would say, oh, great idea. Come back when you have, you know, a handful of clients. Okay, well, that's hard. Yeah. Right? So how do you promise
that's
all that?
That's the chicken and the egg scenario that people that just come out of college complain about. They're like, everyone wants me to have experience, but no one will hire me, so I can't get it.
Welcome to real life, man. Yeah. Like, you know, so here's what you do. You find, like we did, look, every market has early adopters.
Yep.
Even a laggard market, like the government, right? And so you have to go find early adopters.
So there's ways to induce that and entice that. Which way did you guys go with?
Well, you need to find somebody that's who they are.
Yeah.
Right. And so we found, you know, inside the state of Kansas, we found a secretary and sort of an administration that was very open to innovation and said, hey, let's go find, we can do this here. We found a little pocket, a place with leadership who wanted to innovate.
And that was the state of Kansas?
It was the state of Kansas, okay. Yeah, the Turnpike Authority. So been a long time client of ours. And there was a secretary there that was a former, you know, business owner. And he's like, I love this and I get it. Let's go try it. And if it fails, it fails, but let's go try it. And he kind of believed in us and it was successful. And so off we went. And then once we pushed through and we started winning contracts, then you have some momentum, right? And then you need more more capital, right?
Right.
To build up more. And so that's when we went and raised a seed round.
So this is still 2 years into the timeline.
Yeah, this is, we raised it, we closed our seed round in October of 14.
Okay.
So we made some progress and knew we needed capital, okay. Right? And because to build a big business, you need capital. And and so it was time for real capital. So, you know, that was a lot of local, you know, kind of angels, super angels, but also some folks from previous relationships on the coast. And, you know, we set out to raise 750. We closed 1.3 or 1.4. Along the way, interestingly enough, we had a VC, in, a West Coast VC, wanted to give us three times that, but wanted us to move the business to the Bay Area because they didn't think there was enough talent in Kansas City.
Wrong. False.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's like pound sand, man. Yeah. Like, this is a, we've got the internet too.
Yeah.
It's a guy. News flash, like, get out of your bubble.
Well, actually, right at that time too. I mean, that's when Google Fiber had just come in and made us the first in some regards. And, you know, I mean, that is what it is. But yeah. In some ways, that put a little star on the map when it came to Kansas City's tech scene. It didn't hurt.
No, not at all. Yeah. No, definitely.
It brought some people here. I mean, there was a little wagon train that kind of came with that. People wanting to get in and see what this like revolutionary bandwidth would be able to do.
Right.
Only to realize that the problem that, and I was one of these people, the problem that you quickly realize is that fiber connection, which we were Kansas City was the first to have that gigabit internet. Well, the problem is it's kind of like driving down those not an interstate, but like a state highway where you get to stop and go 35 in other towns. So that bandwidth would come firing out of the cannon and then you'd have to slow down.
Yeah.
And then you could go fast again and then you get to slow down. So like it's almost like the rest of the internet wasn't quite ready for that.
But the merits of the brand building for Kansas City
strong,
way more important than the
strong,
technical
true.
Benefits, right?
Yeah. And I don't think we realized that then.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we did on some level, but really in the end, that was probably like what ended up being the best, because they adopted a couple other cities and now Google's kind of backed off that whole project. So anyway, I live in Leawood, so they got in a fight with the city I live in and I never got Google Fiber.
Yeah. We have it in the office, but that's it.
Yeah.
But
I heard it's fast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. So now you're going to raise a seed round and now at this point, all right. So, I think one of the things that listeners would enjoy hearing is like, what was the one indicator that made you really realize you had to go get money from someone else?
Yeah, because I didn't want to build a lifestyle business or a small business. And I wanted to be able to execute. I'm also just, again, an optimist. And so I knew we would win and when we win deals, we needed to be able to deliver and execute in a meaningful way. Right?
And I want to define the term lifestyle business, because if you're getting into this whole process, you're going to hear that a lot. I'll let you define it.
Yeah.
What's a lifestyle
probably
business?
Means something, to your point, probably means something different for everybody. Here's what it means to me. So I wasn't trying to build a small business, you know, that would support the lifestyle of the founders and let us, you know, drive nice cars and live a nice, I mean, that's all great, right?
Like, cash out a little along the way. It's never really going to be huge. You're just kind of cool with what's going on.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with lifestyle business, but it's hard to get people to give you money when you're clearly in that mode or going to be.
Right. And if you're trying to raise money from venture, right, from VC, you know, you're just, they want something that can win big.
Yeah.
Right. And so.
Well, and then also you talk about TAM.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that houses this large, I mean, you were talking about, I mean, government, these payments, it's trillions of dollars worth of commerce.
Yeah, but it also means, look, you kind of operate and make decisions differently. So you'll make investments in kind of building for scale earlier than trying to get to profitability, where if you're trying to build more of a lifestyle business, you care about profitability faster or sooner than if you're trying to build to scale a big business, right? Because you'll spend ahead.
The VC experience is very confusing, like when it comes to your general logic. You know, you're like, I mean, because people will go into these meetings and you know what a VC doesn't want to hear is about how you're going to take 5 years to spend the money that they're going to put in.
Right.
They want you to get through it and get as big as you can, as fast as you can. They're not, and like what John's defining there, they're not concerned about what that bottom line is. I mean, in fact, some of them actually don't want you to make money.
Yeah. Often you'll have to defend, why aren't you spending faster?
Yeah.
Right. So if your unit economics are right, you know, okay, why not spend more to get bigger faster?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, I mean, it really is like someone telling you that 3 + 4 = fish.
But there's also another side of that, right? There's that can be, you know, intoxicating just to spend a bunch of money. And so we're also, Mike and I are very lean and efficient with capital. You know, we've, yeah, I think you can spend where you don't need to spend too. So you want to be really smart about spending, you know, on the right things.
Right.
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 So anywho.
Okay. So here comes the seed round. Yeah. What did you guys do with that first round of cash? I mean, was that for sales and marketing or was that to like
still build,
you're still building.
Building. And you're talking to the sales and marketing, right? So we were really lean on that side. And then we started adding a couple of people there, but it was mostly product and software development.
Right. So how many employees do you have at this point, roughly?
Because
you mentioned the point, like 10 or 12 and getting that, you're no longer squaffacing.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that with that $1.3 million that you moved out of the coffee house.
We did. We did a few months later. Right.
So, but not right away.
Not right away. And we found a spot and that was cheap but cool down the crossroads. And and so we started thinking about carefully how do we go spend and, you know, build things with a return. Let's see. So we did that. We hit a few more milestones. We won some more contracts. We started building. And then we did, it was time to go raise an A round. Okay, hey, we've got something here. This is
now work. now you've got you're adopted by states.
Well, still early, yeah.
But you have some traction at this point.
Exactly.
Now one thing about a client or customer or buyer like the state is while they may be slow to adopt, they may also be really slow to drop you. Meaning, like once you're in, you might be able to like they'll put up with some of your crap.
Trying to get it
figured out because the people that approve these contracts and all the vendors and stuff, like they realize it's not always easy to get people that they have options with.
Yes, but I also think it's it's easy to fire a startup. It's hard to fire IBM or Deloitte.
True.
Or, you know, like I would say, you know, Deloitte can blow it 10 times. No, not to pick on them.
You're right though.
But they can blow it 10 times and it's still Deloitte where...
Well, because the people making those decisions have to sell those decisions upstream.
Right.
And if they say, well, it's IBM and they blew it, like, oh, I get it. They'll fix it because they're IBM.
Yeah, they're IBM, right?
But if you pick the startup and they blow it, now you're like, shit, am I out of a job?
Yeah. So you have to execute, right? And I always say, look, you don't want to grow faster than your ability to execute because those clients, you need them to be referenceable. I mean, they just have to be referenceable. And so, you know, we also had won a few cities. So the city of St. Louis, awesome early client for us. Kansas City, Kansas, awesome early client for us. Really smart, progressive, people who believed in what we were doing and took a chance on us. Right.
And so some of these, so now, and just to clarify, like, I mean, so what you're providing efficiency and payment platforms that are assisting state and local governments with things like like tickets and citations, health services, motor vehicle, professional licensing,
things, right? So we become their web and mobile application. So we introduce a profile and a wallet. So think of it this way. So we replaced their old homegrown website, web application.
Which ours. They were probably not that great at building and maintaining anyway.
Yeah. And
not really able to keep up with the competitive market for employing developers and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the world moves fast. Right. It's harder for them. They don't have the budget or the resources always. Right. And so.
But they need to be good at collecting money. Because they need that money to do everything they do.
And it's more than that. So think of it as the digital government plus payments integrated. And so we just build, you know, it's truly like Venmo for government. It's probably not the best metaphor. But so we'll just send you an alert, text, app, email, however you want to receive it. Hey, Matt, it's 30 days to your tags are due. Is this still your Tesla? Yes. Card on file done. So we digitize the triggers, so they can stop sending you mail that you never see anyway.
Which saves a ton of money.
And then the interaction is modern and better. So you may get the benefit. You go, oh, that was better. That was cool.
I didn't hate this.
Yeah. And then you're carrying, now you've got this digital wallet, secure digital wallet. So now you can carry your, you know, official vehicle registration. So if you get pulled over, you just open up the state's new mobile app powered by us. And you can show law enforcement, here it is, or that could be a phishing or a professional, whatever it is. And then we'll just let you know the next time it's time to do that. So you can kind of just forget it. It's all organized there. Your receipts are in your wallet. Your license is in your wallet. All of those things are in your secure mobile wallet now. We do omni-channel digital. And then we just keep adding more things that are valuable to you. So, hey, you're renewing your tags. Do you also want to get your park pass? Oh, yeah, of course I do. Boom, done. All in one fell swoop. So we see.
God bless you, John.
Yeah, you get this benefit
for real. Like all the stuff you mentioned and like managing all those different things. And like, okay, so I mean, you just talk about so many of these things like that are on here and so many businesses, service providers, professionals, drivers, people in general. Oh, it's easy to let this stuff lapse. Like I did this. So I have two vehicles. And I moved from my office to where we're at now.
Yeah.
And they were sending the old renewal stuff to my old office. Yeah. Well, they don't forward that.
Right.
And I didn't even realize it, but I literally had a car that was I was like a year late on renewals. Right. Like the officer pulled me over and he was like, tell me you're just driving this around the block because you haven't driven it in a year. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, you didn't renew this for like, I mean, clearly pay it would have helped with, totally. I would have appreciated that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you think, so this is a mission driven business for us. So sense of purpose matters a lot to us. So look, you and I can afford to go take the afternoon off and be at the DMV. We don't want to, but we can afford it, right?
You say you could afford it, but at the same time, do you want to? Is that really what you want to spend your personal capital on?
Of course not.
When I say personal capital, meaning like that's time. Like you talk, Blake Miller from Homebase used the term time arbitrage because you can't make more of it. So the effectiveness of how you use it, where, when, why, like that makes a difference. Yeah. And the value, like my own personal time, like, I mean, it's top dollar, John. Yeah, like, and so if I can get that hour back or something,
right. That's really expensive.
Oh yeah, totally. It's because I've got nothing better to do. But no, I think in general, people often undervalue their own time.
Yeah. But let me just finish the point. So while we can afford it, we don't want to.
Right.
Think about, you know, the single dad, the single mom that's working hourly and has three kids. And so that means, hey, time away and childcare. Like, it's just crazy. It's ridiculous, right? And
it's opportunity cost.
Right. And so we think about just giving people access to their government in a new way, in a really personalized, secure way, and just take all that friction out, right? Because most people, I believe you made the point, we believe this a lot, people want to comply. It's just, it should be easier to comply.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt and you forget about it too. You get that postcard in the mail, you put it over. It's like next thing you know, it's like with that stack of coupons that my wife's never going to use.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I'm getting a letter in the mail that's telling me I'm late or like you get pulled over and just something dumb.
Yeah.
Okay, so this starts to catch on.
Yeah.
And now it's popping. So you said you go to Series A.
Yeah.
Now, where was that?
So still really fragile at this point, right? I mean, we were losing money because you're investing, right? So it's not, you're losing money by choice.
Wait,
right?
Startups are, are they supposed to make money?
Right. So that's a funny, there's a side story there.
Don't get me started on that topic.
But yeah, so Series A, we set out to raise, I don't know, a few million dollars to keep building. And then through some conversations, as these things go, we said, well, let's raise three, or I think was the number we had in our head. We ended up closing a little over four, like four and a half, oversubscribed, you know, really fortunate there, you know, to kind of pick and choose. We ended up choosing a lead out of New York City.
And for those of you not familiar with the term oversubscribed, when you open a funding round, you'll often have a say, we'll take X amount, but then so many people are wanting to put money in. You're like, well, we could take more.
Yeah. And so you always, if you can get more, right, like a round's going to cost you 20 or 30% no matter what. So make sure you have enough, because it's the time you need to get to the next round is always longer than you think.
Yep.
Right. Everybody. It's always longer than you think.
And you don't know what's going to happen along the way.
You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So take more, not less, always. Look, here's just.
By the way, I want anybody listening that's thinking about raising money down the road to listen to exactly what John said. And you know, I don't have the firsthand experience and that you do, but like you don't know what's going to happen. It could take longer. You're going to probably need to do it again. And by the way, these things don't happen fast. So if you're like, you don't want to start raising money when you're 2 months away from being out.
Exactly.
Don't you think it's a huge mistake that people make? Like, it's just like, I waited way too long. Well, then you're screwed.
The best time to raise money is when you don't need it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's true for a reason.
Yes.
It's a saying for a reason. Yes. So then, but also, you know, you want to choose your partners, right? Because business building is hard. It's not going to always go well. And so, I would also say the best book I read along the way, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, just killer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, besides this podcast, the next best
thing
would be Hard Things About Hard Things.
I appreciate
some
that.
Awesome advice. And I think just people need to know it's hard, right? So you're hearing like the high points along the way.
No, but
hard, right? It's really hard.
Well, we mentioned earlier that meat grinder. So, you know, you got to keep in mind that the people that are going to write you checks, it's their job to get the best deal for themselves and their investors along the way. So until they give you that check, they are, I mean, technically I don't want to say an opponent, but maybe.
Yeah, but not the ones you want. So the best thing is to build, you know, you're selling. You're always selling, right? So this is why this is an awesome opportunity for them to invest and make money, which is what they want. But you're looking for who's going to help you be successful. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got money. There's a lot of money out there. So first thing is you need to be investable, right? You need to be worthy of being invested in.
What are a couple traits you think that makes someone the most investable?
Look, at that stage, it's all, they're just investing in the leadership,
right?
Like, it's not about
the jockeys.
They don't care about the product per se. They, as long as it's a big market and they see, like, so they're looking for patterns, you know, they're pattern matching. So what else is like this that made money? So they can say, oh yeah, this is this of that.
Right. And also wanting to make sure they're not about to enter the room with an 800-pound gorilla that's just going to crush everything and it's that comes in the door.
Yeah. So yeah, no, that's right. And so, I think the most underrated trait in an entrepreneur is just tenacity. And toughness.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, John, there are, look at all these big competitors in this space. I mean, we were trying to disrupt a space, or still are, full of multi-billion dollar big public companies. Well, won't they just do this? And won't they just, there's never been an absence of competition. Of course it's competitive.
Yeah.
And we're going to win. Right. So you need them to buy into you. So don't lose sight of that, which means they have to trust you. So you got to be honest. So you got to be straightforward about, this is where it's going to be hard. This is why I think we can win and we're going to go do it. Right. And they need to believe you. And so that's really key. And then I'm a big fan of, hey, everybody signs the same term sheet, right? So there are, especially when you're raising from angels, look, angels want the best deal for them. And this is where it gets hard, you know? So back in our seed round, that we had somebody who wanted to write us $500,000 check. And we had about $300,000 circled at that point, right? And so this person agreed to, and then it was just as we were finalizing the term sheet, So you want to establish, you want to negotiate terms with someone who's going to lead the round, and then you can go back to everybody else and say, these are the terms, are you in or out, right? Because you want, it's all momentum, right? Like, so you don't want to call the question too soon. You want to build interest and momentum so you have this big pool and then try to close it. And then, you know, this person just kept kind of, every time we talked, he wanted one more thing. And so we finally just walked, right? And said, hey, this probably tells us a lot about what it's going to be like. Hey, are you, because we want people who are aligned to what we're doing. We want to all be in it together with the same terms, the same goals, and such that everybody wins when we win. Right? I'm a big believer in that, you know, so kind of, you know, people raising capital, get over yourself on valuation. It's way more important to get the deal done than to save a few points.
Sure.
Right. Like valuation is probably the most overrated thing. You know, I have a friend who didn't do a deal because he felt like he was getting screwed on valuation. And guess what? He didn't get a deal done. Well, what's and worse?
What's that valued at now?
Right, exactly. So like, man, the most important, progress over perfect. I'm rambling a lot, but
No.
But you also need to pick and choose, right? So we pulled the plug on that and just thanked him and moved on. We ended up closing our round and being oversubscribed. And we got, at each point, we've always had everybody sign the same terms. Because I don't want, you know, this investor to get better terms than that investor.
Right.
We're all in it together.
Yeah,
and you're either on board with that or you're not.
I like it.
Right. So
what you were just mentioning, you know, I tell people in sales, there's two four letter words that matter: sold and next, you know, and like you hit the next button on one guy. Cause some people, they, like you said, it's just like never ending string of boats. It's like, I want more. I want this. Well, why are you separate? Why are you special compared to everyone else?
Yeah.
Okay. So Series A, now we're at $4.5 million. There was another 1.3. Okay. Now we're getting there, but we're not even to the big checks yet.
No, that's right. That's right.
So, and we can, and, you know, so at this point, so here comes now at this point, are we still stepping on the gas of the product development and implementation? Or are we adding business development now? Are you still the sales guy and the sales guy?
Yeah, we're adding a couple of salespeople at this point, but I'm still the lead on that.
I feel your pain. I do it every day.
Yeah, but I like doing it. So
I do and I don't.
I like to be on airplanes and calls. I like to be connected to the market.
Sure.
Right. I mean,
I tell people it helps me keep my finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
Of the business. But
yeah, I don't do well if I'm just sitting in an office. We don't even have offices, so I'm not an office guy either. I like to be in the mix,
right?
In the bullpen. So, we closed that round. We're building more, still trying to, you know, get more and more traction all the time, trying to build. We're out selling. We've got this massive growing pipeline.
So at this point, I would imagine states now are coming to you.
Oh, no. Nope.
No?
Well, a little, but mostly I'm also a believer in, I am not patient, Matt. So I don't.
But that's what makes me a good salesperson, not being patient, because I'll ask you to buy it pretty quick.
Urgency. Yeah. But I mean, I'm a believer. Nobody's coming to you.
Right.
Even if they are in a little bit, they're not coming to you. You need to go to them.
Sure.
And be where they are. And so,
but if you can get both,
this
happens sometimes too. So like, if you think about the value, so like, you know, there's 50 states and you have this massive addressable market, but at the same time, it's actually quite finite.
Oh, sure.
In some regards.
Sure.
And so like, I mean, getting the best of both worlds, I would imagine that's happening at some point, but not yet.
Yeah, but not yet, because you're still early, right? So you've still got early clients that are awesome. We have awesome referenceable clients, kind of a bit of a grassroots.
That had to change the game, though, when you can finally 100%. Say there are now 50, 100, or however many states, governments, whatever, using us.
Well, and then the big ones, right? So I'm a believer. I like to build things kind of big to small, because you learn more that way. And I like to kind of hunt and kill big things. As a sales guy, I don't actually hunt, but
I hear you. I talk about whale fishing.
Yeah, but
I would never, fish a whale. So don't comment about that.
Right.
Your point is, if you're going out and you're in your fishing boat and you just have like a little tiny kid's pole and a bobber and a worm, you're never getting that whale in the boat. because it'll pull you out of the boat or yank the boat out to sea or just something. But if you go out ready to get a whale, you can get all the other stuff that comes in.
It's
a bold way to sell for some people, because when you're in the beginning, you're like, I don't have any sales, I don't have any clients. You kind of want to take whatever you can get.
Yeah, but I like to build things the big logos. So we started winning deals with the biggest NFL cities, million plus population counties, big states, the biggest states. And
you mentioned NFL cities. I once created a ranking system for markets based on the number of pro sports teams they had. It was when I worked for, it was the last time I actually had a job working for someone else. Uh-huh. And I had a 13 state territory. And they said, we don't know how much we should really be getting out of all these markets. And like, it took me a couple of days and I was like, you know what? We do know how much we should. Because Chicago has like five. Like major sports teams. This is before soccer came out, but you know, like you look at some of that and it actually directly correlated with what the expectations should have been. Whereas opposed to Kansas City, like has MLB and we have an NFL team. Yeah. So that was a two sport town.
Yeah. Well, it's part of knowing your market, right? And being prepared.
It was the most universal thing I could come up with. There are a couple weird, like LA was not, it didn't fit the mold because at the time there weren't football teams there. Yeah. So it gave us a good way to kind of give an idea of how much that should be.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you guys are cooking with gas.
Yeah.
And you're making some progress. And we've been promising like a big reveal at some point. So did that come with Series B, or did we get into like Series C, D, E?
No. So we did the Series A. We did a couple of small notes after that with just existing shareholders. And then we did the big this last March. We closed a big, over $100 million growth round with Insight Partners.
Tadao. $100 million.
Plus.
Yeah. Well, that had follow up, didn't it?
No, that was a misunderstanding by a reporter.
Oh, it was.
Which is funny. But it was good news, so we didn't go out and correct it. But
let's talk about that for a second, man. Like, okay. $100 million. Oh, wow. So that's a lot of money. But I think what people don't realize as well is, I mean, that is going into the company. I mean, it's at that point, maybe owners and other people are either, taking a little bit off of that. We don't get into those details here on the podcast, but that now at that point, okay, now the level of legitimacy.
Yeah.
But you also have to perform now. On a level that is unprecedented, right?
Yeah. Well, we grew over 800% last year.
What?
And it's all.
Was it like that year over year in the prior years, or?
It's been good. Yeah. I mean, it's been growing really fast.
800%.
I mean, it's and revenue for us is a trailing indicator of success, right? So in our model, we go win a contract, which takes a long time. Mm-hmm. We implement and integrate and deliver. It's still at no cost. So no subscription fees, no maintenance fees, no implementation or integration fees. We do it all. We take all the risk. And then we turn it on, we go live, and we become the new digital solution, official digital solution. So ICANN in Kansas or MyFlorida or MyNCDMV, whatever they want to call it, powered by us. Okay. So we want people to know they're working with their government. We're just the platform to do it. And then we make just a little bit of money, small on each transaction. So as it performs, we make money. And as we make government more digital and more transparent and connect people to their government in new ways through this wallet and profile. So in other words, as we create value for a constituent, for that government, we also create value for us. Never before that. But then as we do it, we make just a little bit, tick, 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 every time somebody uses the platform. And it works. We're adding, we added over 1 million wallets in 6 months this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when the notification comes from the state or whoever's using, and once again, that's payitgov.com. So it says, it's basically like, hey, Matt, it's time to renew this or that.
Yeah.
And can we suggest that you install this digital wallet?
Yeah, it'll be
Will connect to you as a person.
Yeah, either download this or, download ICANN in Kansas, right? ICANN. Or if you just go to the DMV's website, you'll find ICANN. So it's we become their new digital experience, and it's omni-channel, right? So you might use it at your desktop one day and carry it on your phone the next, right? And it'll, so we just kind of work with you that way. So you'll find us, but yeah, we work with them. By the way, we work with them to deliver a great product and then drive awareness, mm-hmm. right? So we help them do all the marketing. And in fact, we just hired our first CMO 2 weeks ago. And this guy in San Francisco, so we're breaking news here, Matt. It's not.
Let's do it. You heard it here first.
This guy is the head of search and experimentation at Uber. And he's joining us as our CMO to help, you know, both the kind of B2B, help us win more clients, but also help drive awareness, right? And pay off the value prop to everybody. So you can quit going to the DMV, for instance, or whatever it is.
And once again, God bless Pat for that.
Yeah. Anywho.
I can only imagine how many people have thanked you for that.
You know, can I tell you what is torture though?
Please.
So we do this across the country, some of the biggest states, and we do a lot of things, a lot of different services and more all the time, because you don't raise over $100 million unless you're just hell bent on R&D and new capabilities all the time and growth, which we are, right? But the killer for me is the state of Missouri where I live. Still not a paying client.
Like
we have Jackson County, Missouri. St. Louis is an awesome client. We're hopeful, we're optimistic, but I still go to the DMV in my own state. How rich is that?
I mean, the struggle is real, John. Know, what are you going to do? What I are mean, you going to do?
We're as you said, the best funded startup in the state. I mean, growth company in the state. That's just how it goes sometimes.
Right? I mean, it really is. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. I won't even get into some of those things. Like, it's almost like that feeling. So, you know, I've had things we've done in the past, and I've actually like talked to our own employees. I'm like, "What do you mean you aren't using our own product?" or something like that. I'm like, "How can you make this better without actually using it?"
Yeah.
So when you look back, all right. So then let's like take this all in. It's over $100 million worth of funding. Like $100 million is hard to conceptualize. Mm-hmm. Like people, like realistically, like if you actually, and I'm not asked this as a rhetorical, but like if you had to envision like how big of a case you would put $100 million worth of $100 bills. Yeah. And like, I think we would all be really wrong about that.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, just weird stuff. Like, I mean, and it's not like I don't sit around and think too much about it, but you're like, what's $100 million worth of anything? Yeah. So, all right. So two things as we kind of wrap this up. And first off, thanks again for coming in. This
is my pleasure.
I think it's really good for those of you listening to kind of catch the reality of what some of the funding stuff is. You know, a lot of people are I talk to so many people at so many different stages of business, guys like you that succeeded at $100 million in funding. And then, you know, it might tomorrow be some dude that's trying to get 25 grand because he just wants to do something simple and get it started. Yeah. But I run into a lot of people they're so VC resistant, and I tell them, I'm like, don't be, you know, like these are people that, and I think that some of them, like you said, a couple key points here is, you know, don't get the round close, bring the money in. Don't be like, who cares about 2 points? Like, at the same time, like I'm an advocate of not just giving away equity for no reason, but at the same time, like when you have these strategic partners and one of the things that really hit home was understanding who those strategic partners are. And if you can couple yourself and your business and your efforts around and with people that have this truly vested interest in your success, mm-hmm. they move you forward. Like the people that can make a phone call, like someone helps you get in front of 8 governors, sure. unless you just happen to know 8 governors. But these are the kind of people that change the game.
That's
for
exactly
you.
Right.
Because the amount of time it would take to go from normal contact, if you could even get in front of 8 governors, much less in 24 hours, impossible. It would just take you just going to spend like 2 years climbing that ladder and probably never even, you'll show up to the meeting and they won't even be there. But being, you know, partnering with the right people, not being afraid to have money, giving people the same terms. Cause like, well, within a round, being fair with some people. And by the way, the reason that's important is no one wants to find out later they got the shittiest deal of all. Yeah.
It also helps you manage all those different asks, right? By saying, "Hey, this is the deal. We're all in it together."
Right. Yeah. Right. So, what's one thing that you look back at that was just a failure. Like, and we always like to like, and you say, okay, by the way, and you guys can check this out on YouTube if you want to see the look on John's face right there. Cause he, I sense that entrepreneur to entrepreneur look where you're like, God, there's so many failures that I can't even like which one.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that people understand that even the most successful businesses, founders, startups, all of it, oh my God, like it's failure city along the way. We just don't get stuck on those. We learn from them and we say next and move on.
That's right. And you don't even, I don't even think of them as failures. I just think it's like, that's just part of
another way of figuring out how to not do it correctly or whatever. There's a lot of positive, and I appreciate your positive outlook on that, but you just move forward.
That's just real, right? Yeah. Like it's part of the deal.
Yeah.
So you just keep overcoming them. Yeah. Right. But and one that jumps out is initially, I thought this would just be, you know, a mobile only. Because the governments all have websites already. Yeah. It's going to be really hard. And then as we started doing it, they all kept saying, well, why wouldn't you just do all of it for us? And I'm not the smartest guy, Matt, but I'm not the dumbest either. And I was like,
backhanded compliments. No, about it.
I mean, like, you know, like, of course we should. Right. And so we kind of quickly said, yeah, we let's do all that. And so, you know, it turned into a really big part of our story, like listening. Right. And then being ambitious. And
so you did end up building out the websites with them or did you get into it and you're like, whoa, this is way more than what we wanted.
No. We do it our way. So we don't build websites per se. We build web applications and they're omnichannel. So web and mobile apps all talking to the same platform.
Right.
You know, in the GovCloud.
Which was part of the problem that a lot of these platforms had anyway.
Yeah. So you're like, none of it knows you. So it's all smarter now because of us. Right. Because of what we do. I mean, digitally smarter. I don't mean that we're smarter.
Sure. Yeah.
We're a really smart team. But I think it's this could be even bigger than we thought. Right. And we always thought we could build a $1 billion company and we're kind of on that path, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do and we'll make a bunch more mistakes. And, you know, it's always that, like, if you're watching a duck swim across a pond, it looks really graceful and underwater, it's just kicking like mad.
That's analogy. Man. I've never, you know, and I feel like someone has pointed that out at some point, but now you think about it and it's true.
Yeah.
Like there's definitely that surface layer to everything. Yeah. And I think no matter what level your business is at, like that struggle is real.
Of course it is. And it's hard.
And so as an entrepreneur, like, I mean, so you've realized you've come to, honestly, John, what I'm hearing here is that this was an amazing story up to now, but really I'm sensing more along the lines of you feel like this is still just getting started.
Yeah. Early innings for sure. Yeah. I mean, when you're like, well, how many suitcases to hold 100? But I've never thought about it. Cause to me, it's just fuel for innovation and growth and value creation. And
by the way, I had never thought about that either. And then I was like, you know, you're trying to conceptualize it. And I talk to my wife sometimes about the possibility of things and, you know, she always admittedly should be like, yeah, I don't have any ability to conceptualize what $1 billion is like. I mean, and that's the thing is like, who does? Like, right. Well, people, maybe people with $1 billion don't
nobody
even get
does.
It.
Yeah.
That's my point. It's like, you get to the point though. And, and look, there's a recurring theme that has continued to happen on this podcast. And the most successful, innovative, brilliant people, and you're included in this list that have been on this show, I'll say, and I say this too, like you can't focus on the money.
Yeah,
like the money is a byproduct of getting good at whatever it is that you do.
Right.
And if you're, and people ask me all the time, they say, what do I need to do to make more money? I'm like, well, you got to quit focusing on money. I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, because if you're focusing on the money part, you're not focusing on getting good at what you do.
Yeah.
Whether you're an employee, an entrepreneur, anyone. You know, anyone focus on getting good at what you do and then see what happens as a result. Because the money really is that byproduct of creating value, of doing things that make someone's life easier or make it more profitable. Like there's a lot of reasons that people will buy things from you. So anyway, once again, if you get a chance, go to PAYITGOV, payitgov.com. John, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Great. This is awesome, man. You know, if I can say one last thing.
You can say whatever you want.
Man, this is, being an entrepreneur is really hard, right? But you just have to be tenacious. Like, it has to matter to you. You know, like that toughness. I was, the best compliment I've ever been paid early in my career at EMC as a sales guy, the CTO of EMC, this huge company, right? Yeah,
publicly traded monster, yeah, right?
Big company, now part of Dell. He says, "You're my favorite sales rep." And he said, and I was like, "Wow, that's cool." Like, but he probably says that to all the sales reps, right? Or whoever he's with. And he said, "I'm going to pay you this compliment. I want you to know it's a compliment." And he said, he goes, "You know the difference between you and a pit bull?" And I was like, "Well, can't imagine, right?" And he said, "Eventually that pit bull will let go." And it's like the best way to describe me, yeah, any successful entrepreneur, probably you too. It's like, I'm too dumb to quit. I will figure it out.
I think that's fair. And, you know, that's one of the things that we mentioned earlier, that, you know, investors look for that sometimes the jockey, sometimes the horse, but one of the things, okay, so that's in that same, all right. So once again, I am a sales guy. I admit it. I'm proud of it. Yeah. Like that's what is really good. I'm also a promoter of sorts. So, with that, so many people have said to me and I think it's sometimes they don't mean it as a compliment. They're like, "Man, you really are persistent."
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in some ways they're like saying, "Oh yeah, well, okay. Well, you're clearly not going to stop asking. So I can either tell you to pound sand and never call me again,
right,
or I can just do this."
Yeah.
But I always take that as a compliment. I'm like, "Thanks. Totally. I appreciate it." Yeah, like that means a lot to me that you would notice that I'm persistent, because I will work that hard for you and probably even harder once you're a client.
Right. It's exactly right.
And you know, so, and it's like that pit bull analogy, and the pit bull is misunderstood. I used to have a pit bull and it was like the nicest, sweetest dog ever.
Sure.
Unless you put him right in front of another like 90-pound male dog. And then God forbid you were in that space. But you know, at the same time, like that, and that's that level of not quitting. And I think any entrepreneur or founder, like you know, we didn't even have enough time to get into it. There was definitely like, so I would say at some point in this business that you just defined, there was a coin toss moment probably where you're like, "Oh man, I'll flip a coin. Maybe I won't even do this anymore." Like now it's not necessarily
I
refer to that in one of my books and my wife was like, "Yeah, if it hits tails, are you really going to quit?" And I was like, "No, but you're thinking,
right.
You kind of have that moment." Yeah. It's like, you know, a song that I listen to regularly has a line that says, "I'm well endowed with all the doubt I need." You know, like we're all like very embedded with that. And the only way to come through it is to fight, to claw. Like, I mean, and here's the thing is like, if everything I'm doing fails, like, oh man, I got bigger things to worry about than that. So,
of course.
So, you know, it's so many different things. Well, once again, John, thank you so much. For those of you listening, if you want to check us out on Instagram, check out at Startup Hustle Podcast. You can also check out, if you want to see what my face that's made for radio looks like, you can visit our new YouTube channel. We have been recording this. John's a much cleaner and better looking version of me. So maybe that'll give you a reason to come by and check it out. Thanks for coming in, John.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See you guys next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Startup Hustle with Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit startuphustle.xyz. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on Startup Hustle.